thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 26, posted on the 19th of March, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. Yes, Ireland's best business podcast is exactly half a year old with 26 episodes under our belts. And our audience keeps growing and growing all the time. Mila Bajas to all of you for your support. On this edition, COVID has made us do a lot of strange or unusual things, but none so weird as the man who runs underwater carrying rocks because it's good for business, he says. Then we have an engineering company that cooperates with its competitors to win business, and that works. We'll explain what a B Corp is and why being one is good for your business. And if you think your work may not reappear for a long time post-COVID, it may be time to switch career to one where there could be up to 150,000 vacancies in Ireland alone. If you know a great company that should be featured on That Great Business Show, do get in touch. Producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com will get us, and we'll do all of the work after that. And That Great Business Show is only possible thanks to the support of that great shaving oil company, DeFacto. Made in Mayo, it is the world's best shaving oil. For men and women, it's the best anyone can get. DeFactoShave.com.
Conobio at That Great Business Show.
We're all doing a lot of strange things during lockdown, trying to remain sane. Poor little pooches are having the legs worn off them as their owners get their 5, 10 or 20K a day done. Gardens have been tilled, retilled and then tilled again, whilst others have gone crazy on sea swimming in our freezing seas. But the strangest activity I've come across is that of underwater running. A curious article this week in the Irish Times by journalist Arlene Harris about a Greystones Wicklow-based business owner and underwater runner, Dave Kerr, has already had 4,500 views on his LinkedIn page, as people obviously want to know more. Just as we do here on That Great Business Show, which is why we've broken our own rule around gender balance on every podcast just this once. We're not so much interested in why Davey does it. We believe strongly in each to their own, but we are intrigued by Dave's claim that running undersea, carrying heavy boulders whilst you hold your breath for maybe up to a minute and a half is good for business. Dave Kerr, owner of VPT IT Solutions, based in Kilmacannock, County Wicklow. You are very welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Conal.
Are you mad?
I don't think so.
I think everybody else does. The numbers of people who have mentioned to me that they have seen this article, and all of them are saying, is he odd, mad, or what?
Well, it's crazy, Conal, because the other morning I was walking along the beach and I met a lady and she said, did you read that article in the Times about this guy who runs underwater? And she says, I swim here all the time. And I said, I've never seen people doing that before, but I want to try it. And I said, well, actually, that was me. And she said, oh, right. You're a bit mad, are you? And I said, no, not really. No, it's just a bit of fun, but I think everybody should try it. And she said, oh, no, not for me, not for me. And I said, oh, well, maybe at some stage you might try it, you know.
Tell us what that is, because underwater running, well, we'll get on to why in a second, but just what is it?
It basically is taking a few deep breaths, avoiding hyperventilation, and we'll come back to that maybe in a while, but taking a few deep breaths, holding your breath, duck diving down onto the bottom of the water. It might be anything up to 7 or 8 meters, but generally speaking, below 6 meters in depth. And you pick up an appropriate weighted rock, which would be anything really, I suppose, anything between 10 and 25 kilos. And you grab it and you run as far as you can on that breath underwater for as far as you can. And then you obviously have to surface at some stage to take another breath.
Where did you find or learn about this?
I was always fascinated by the underwater. I've been scuba diving since I was 14 and I still actually scuba dive with my dad.
So you
I teach it, yeah. I'm a monitor two instructor with the Irish Underwater Council. But a few years ago, I actually did a course in Mullaghmore and on free diving, because
I know, going back one step there, because I love the explanation you give. You did a course, a free diving course, but not a free course that was free. what is free diving?
So free diving is essentially diving on a breath, where in total contrast to scuba diving. Scuba diving is diving with equipment, as in an aqualung on your back. So I've been scuba diving for many, many, many years. And to be honest, a lot of the time when you're diving in Ireland, like, we dive as a club all year round, which a lot of clubs don't. But you potentially spend about 15, 20 minutes putting on your gear, checking your gear, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get into the water with about 2 meters viz and you freeze your proverbials off. And there's very little to see in that sort of visibility. So you spend another 15, 20 minutes taking your gear off, having had a 10 minute dive. So I kind of said to myself, geez, it'd be great to do something that you don't have to have all this equipment on, and you can still get somewhat the same sort of experience in or under the water. So, like I say, a couple of years ago, I did a free diving course, not free as in money free, and with Sharon, and we went over to Mullaghmore and did that. And I came back and I discovered that there was another friend of mine who's a sea swimmer, Brian Gilmore. And he was very interested in it as well. And I think he had been doing a bit of it already. So the two of us just started doing it. And every day that there's visibility in Greystones, which is typically in the summer, obviously, we do it. And it's just exhilarating. It's brilliant.
And we are going to post on our social media the videos of you. I don't think anybody has seen these yet. Obviously you have, but I don't think the great Irish public has seen these yet. And of you literally going down, you go down, what, about 6 meters?
About 6 meters, yeah.
And then pick up this rock and run with it.
Yeah.
Now, we're not a crazy sports show. We are a business show.
Yes.
Why is it good for business?
I feel it's really, really good for my head anyway, in terms of business, because I get up in the morning, I go for a run and I go for a swim. And both of those activities, I suppose, I have a little app called Blinkist. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it basically is a short version of non-fictional books. And I would typically read a couple of books or listen to a couple of books during my run. During my swim, I'm thinking about my business and thinking about different things. But when you're rock running, you can't really afford to be thinking of anything else. You're thinking of your breath and holding it, and you're not really thinking about your toast or the next day or anything else. You're thinking about what you're actually doing. So it totally focuses the mind, if you like. So I have a huge contrast there, if you think about it. So I have time to think about my business, and then I'm laser focused on what I'm doing in rock running. And after that, I literally, I'm in the office at kind of 8 o'clock and I'm just buzzing, I suppose. Now, part of that is probably due to the hypoxic nature of the breath holding thing.
Now, explain that to the layman, Moshe the Hale.
Well, I suppose we don't hyperventilate. So it can be seen as quite dangerous. Hyperventilation is where you're breathing in and out quite rapidly. And by doing so, you get rid of any excess CO2 in the breath. So when you actually duck dive, if you were to hyperventilate, the brain is kind of starved of that trigger that makes you think that you need the next breath. So what happens is, typically in those situations, is you have what they call shallow water blackout, or they call it silent killer, I think, in Australia. And that basically means that you're going to drown. So you've got about 2 minutes if that happens under the water for someone to get you out of there, whereas typically to drown in seawater, it typically would take you between 6 and 8 minutes. So it's quite kind of dangerous from that perspective. So you do really have to focus your mind on it. So by doing that as well, you get this tingly feeling, because your tissues are obviously deoxygenated and you've no real oxygen in it until you come up for your next breath. So it's just a hypoxic high, I suppose, is what you'd call it.
How many times do you go down, up and down, and how many hours a day do you spend doing this?
Well, I wouldn't say it's hours, you know, but it's only many hours in the day. But we would probably do about 10 or 15 dives each, you know. And that's the other thing I just wanted to point out as well. It is actually quite dangerous. So you really cannot do it on your own.
You have to explain as well that you are not just a underwater diver and rock runner. You also are a fourth Dan Shotokan karate instructor. You have also run up, I think, Kilimanjaro. You played, did you play amateur, semi-amateur Australian football?
Yes, I did all that, all right.
But you do marathon man, triathlon man.
No, I do a few triathlons, all right, but they're only little sprint triathlons, you know. I'm only a baby when it comes to
that. So just to explain to people, it's not just, you're not your average Joe.
Do you know what? I like all sports, to be honest with you. And you know, when I do something or I just get attracted to it and addicted to it a little bit. So I kind of tend to just do it to the best of my ability, I suppose, you know. So, and that even comes with holding your breath. Like, you know, I look at people and they can hold their breath for kind of 10 minutes and I'm saying, oh, Jesus, how the hell did I do that? You know, so I kind of started off practicing and downloaded an app called Apnea. So, of course, I'm there holding my breath in the office and people are going by and I'm like an advert for Mr. Ribena, you know. But anyway, not to go, oh, he's holding his breath again, you know, here he goes again. So, but I was able to get up to just under 4 minutes, you know. So I kind of do tend to get a little bit addicted to these kind of sports things and try and do the best I can at them, you know. Maybe it's in my DNA. I don't know. I don't know where that comes from, really.
We like having little business tips or little business hacks. So you've already told me, go down and run around with rocks and it'll clean your head of any business issues for a while. Second one is you do meditate.
Yes, I do, yeah.
That helps you hugely.
Yeah, I think everyone should do it. And I know there's a massive emphasis, particularly now, Cunnell, in terms of mindfulness and well-being and everything else. And at the end of the day, we are all very, very busy people. And like, everyone has a mobile phone. I mean, everybody. I mean, probably from the age of 7 and upwards, or I don't know what age, but whatever. We all have accounts, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the list goes on. We all have an email account. And it's just, I think everybody's minds are just so much more busier now than they ever were before. And I'm not sure that your brain gets a rest when you're actually sleeping. From all that, because you're dreaming and you're doing all the different things. So I try my best. I wake up at 5:45 and I try my best to meditate for 20 minutes. Now, it's very difficult. I mean, I never succeed in doing 20 minutes at a go, to be brutally honest. My mind starts going all over the place and start thinking of things, but I always try and bring myself back and ground myself again. But I find that really stabilizes me. And you know, the yoga people would say that if you do meditate, that time that you meditate, so in other words, 15 minutes is worth at least 4 times that amount in terms of sleep. So now I don't do it for that reason, but I do it just to calm everything down before I go out running and swimming and rock running and all that sort of stuff.
And you do have a business.
I do have a business, yeah. I have a great team up in Kilmechanic, and we've actually bought a company in Cork recently. So we've an office down in Cork as well.
You're in IT Solutions, VBT.
VBT. Yeah. We've 30 people employed, and we basically have about 350 clients, of whom we support their networks. And thank God, through the pandemic, we have about 40 clients that are in, particularly in the non-profit or the charity side of things. So we're allowed to stay open. So it's kind of business as normal, and maybe it's wrong to say it, but business has been very good because of COVID.
One final thing is wearing your Shotokan hat. You are a sensei, you are a teacher of Shotokan karate. There's one little hack that I have heard about dropping your shoulders. Yes. Is that good for business?
I think so, yeah. I mean, only recently, Colonel, because of the lockdown, we had to close the club. Myself and Kirsty and Danny, two great friends of mine, ran the club. So we started training ourselves. And I came up with the idea of trying to practice the katas. Now, a kata is a sequence of moves in martial arts. But trying to practice the katas that I didn't particularly like. And when I thought about it, the reason why I didn't like them was because, first of all, I wasn't good at them. And second of all, the reason I wasn't good at them was because I didn't train them. So we started doing the katas. Each of us started doing the katas that we actually didn't particularly like. So I kind of feel that the likes of martial arts seriously grounds you, first of all. But second of all, it challenges your brain and your mind to sort of say to yourself, well, listen, I need to do those couple of jobs. I've been avoiding them for as long as I can possibly remember. But you know what? I'm just going to go at it and just sort it out. So that's what it's kind of done for my head in terms of dealing with kind of thorny issues, or even stepping outside the box and actually trying different things and trying different solutions and trying different avenues to get to where you need to get to.
Like taking dives down and picking up rocks. If anybody wants to find you or play with you or go underwater with you, where will they find you?
Well, they'll find myself and Brian on the South Beach, just at the Men's there. There's a place called the Men's on the South Beach in Greystones. And in the summer particularly, we'll be there pretty much most mornings.
At what time?
Well, that depends. See, Brian isn't as early a riser as I am. But typically anything with time between 7 and 8 in the morning.
Okay. And if anybody on the West Coast or the East Coast or the South Coast or anybody wants to start doing it, you are on an email, I presume.
Yeah. It's dave@vbt.ie.
So. Okay, well, you can get it there. Before I let you go, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Ooh, that's a great question. Do you know, the first thing I'd say, Colonel, is they'd have to be a great bit of crack. You know, we have a great bit of fun in the office. We really, really do. I mean, I know it sounds a bit mad, but I have very little interest in IT, but I have a good idea of how it works. But I have people that know IT inside out, upside down and backwards, obviously. But so the first thing that I would say is they'd have to be a great bit of crack. They'd have to really, really challenge me. And they'd have to be a lot better than me because I want to learn from them. So I kind of think somebody like a cross between Stuart Lancaster and maybe Brian O'Driscoll, something like that, whereby, you know, I'd be hearing all sorts of rugby stories and that sort of stuff, which would be hugely of interest to me, you know.
So you want half of each?
Yeah, I'll have half a Stuart Lancaster because he's a great, great coach, and the other half of O'Driscoll because he'd make me laugh, hopefully, as much as I think he would.
Good, good, good. Listen, Dave Kerr, owner of VBT IT Solutions, Kilmacanna, County Wicklow, you are so welcome to have joined us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Colonel.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favourite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Business can be cutthroat. To succeed, you have to produce better products or services at more competitive prices than your competitors. Unless you belong to the Link Network, that is. This member-led organisation based in North Cork and East Limerick attracted my attention because it challenges that orthodoxy. According to Link's chair, Patrick Buckley, several member companies have found they're growing faster together than they would on their own due to ongoing collaboration. And that man, Patrick Buckley, knows quite a bit about success as his company, the EPS Group, based in Mallow and employing over 500 people, is one of those hugely successful under-the-radar companies that I love finding out about. And that's why Patrick joins me now at That Great Business Show. Hiya, Patrick.
I'm very good. Thank you, Colin.
500 people. Let's just talk about that first of all. That makes you one big employer.
It does, but I suppose it's all about perspective. It didn't happen overnight. There's a lot of people over the last 52 years who've been involved in growing that business, you know, from initially three people in 1968. So we're very fortunate. The current generation of management, I'm just one of them. We have a great team. And thankfully, over the last 8 to 10 years, we've had a great opportunity in expanding the business regionally in Northern Ireland and in England and Scotland, and also growing our business here in Ireland on the back of, you know, we've had, despite the recession then from 08, 09 and 10, we've had a great opportunity to expand the business and grow in Ireland as well.
What is the business?
Well, the business EPS is involved in water and wastewater treatment and pumping solutions. So we've
plenty of that in Ireland.
There is, and in fairness, the Ireland as a state obviously there's a huge and significant investment in our water infrastructure, which creates huge opportunity for companies like EPS, and there are many others. And we've also been very fortunate that there's a very strong domestic market as well for a lot of the products and services we provide for homes and farms and industry, and obviously we have a lot of customers as well in the dairy sector, the food and beverage, data center, and pharmaceuticals. So there's a lot to make work out of, but it's tough going.
I smile because you went traditional, you know, dairy co-ops, etc., and then you throw in data centers. It's a kind of a left of field one, isn't it?
It is, but a lot of the data centers use a lot of water to cool the data banks, so they need that water to be treated.
When did you cop that one?
We've been supplying solutions now to data centers for over 10 years, both in Ireland, UK, and thankfully across Europe. We've a great team, and we've been very, very fortunate actually to have some great partnerships with a number of Irish companies, you know, that are leaders in data center development across Europe. You
That's
know.
A very useful segue for me, because the real reason you're here is to talk about the Link Network, and that is all about collaboration, that you find, and you've obviously proven, that working with others, not against them, that you just are far more successful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Link is something that started initially in 2014 in Mallow. Group of businesses in Mallow, we came together.
Was it your big idea?
No, there was a number of people involved, to be honest. There was just a number of companies with some other interested bodies in the area. And we got together, and unknown to ourselves, there was a similar group in Limerick who were on the same journey. And we were, you know, we all had the same types of needs and wants around training and development and trying to network and trying to grow businesses and get scale. And thankfully, with the foresight of Limerick County Council and Cork County Council and their economic development units, they brought us together. And we formed a group that got some funding through the REDS funding. We had a manager hired called Teresa Mulville, who's still with us and coordinating on our behalf, on behalf of the members. And the cluster gradually grew. And like any group coming together, the first couple of years are, you know, they can be a bit slow. Takes time for people to, I suppose, to get to know each other better, trust each other, and learn and understand how the network works for them and works best for everyone. Because we've had some companies come and go because I suppose they had a perspective of what the network was about, and it didn't fit with what they had perceived it would be.
Give me an example of how it works well, and then when it doesn't work.
It works well when, I suppose, over the last 2 years in particular, the momentum of the group has really, really progressed. And in particular, the last 12 months with the onset of the pandemic and you know, remote working and all of our meetings going online. But our normal model was we would generally every 5 or 6 weeks, we would meet, network, visit a factory or visit someone's workshop or some of the multinational companies that support our group. They would facilitate, you know, a study of their site, and we would pick a topic that would be relevant for all companies, and we all learn from those. But when we went online, we met every week, every Friday morning at 8 o'clock, and everyone was in the same place exactly this time last year. You know, what's going to happen? Where's it going to go? What's my business going? You know, how's my business going to be impacted? And all of the requirements around COVID with respect to health and safety, we all had the same needs. We wanted to initially protect our staff and our employees, make sure everyone was safe. Obviously continue to service our customers, but do it in a safe way. So we started to exchange and share solutions to the challenges, because no matter whether your company is a small business or a large business, the challenges were the very same. You know, the pandemic is equal to everybody and every company. And thankfully, over the course of the last 12 months, with support from the local enterprise offices on our second round of funding, both in Cork and Limerick, we've gradually progressed and pulled together a huge momentum of initiatives that were the requests of the companies when we did our analysis 2 years ago. So what's worked really well is we've learned immensely from each other. We've done business together. There are companies now dealing with each other that didn't realise that they could support each other.
It is interesting that, isn't it? I was reading about that. And give an example of that, about people who may have workshops that are underutilised, for example.
Yeah, well, there's two good examples. One would be that exactly that, you know, we have companies that cover the broad range of engineering and manufacturing, so high-end precision to companies that manufacture agricultural equipment, renewable energy, power generation, you know, companies involved in robotics and automation, and everything in between. And some of these companies have to invest quite extensively in equipment, laser cutting equipment, you know, highly automated equipment, because it's precision engineering. Some of the other companies may, from time to time, it might be once a month, it might be twice a month, it might be twice a year, have a need for that type of laser cutting for some particular component they're making. And collectively, as we've all discussed with each other, we now understand that, you know, when someone invests, say, €500,000 on a piece of equipment, they want it running 7 days a week, and they can only bring in enough work for 4 days a week themselves. They now have the flexibility of booking out that fifth day to their other members. And then once we know, and you're not in a rush, you can plan it. And hopefully you'll fill that fifth day and that capacity, and they get that overhead and fixed cost paid for, which is essentially what they want to try and do. Stuff that hasn't worked so well is, you know, people have come to meetings in the earlier days, and it's all about, it's like anything, it's what you put in, it's what you get out. And some one or two would have thought that it was coming and we were giving with no inputting. And it's not about that. It takes time. We've over 50 companies in our group, but we have about 26 to 30 very active, and you will always have 5 or 8 that will drift in and out. And they come and go. And that's, as we've learned now, as we've studied other clusters in Scandinavia and in Germany and Italy, that's the nature of clusters. You need to have a broad mix of companies, and some will come and go as they need or as they have a need, and that's fine. And then you have another core group of companies in a cluster who are all in, and they're very committed to it, and that's what makes them strong, because everyone's welcome to our group.
And do the member companies have to pay, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we have a membership, it's €350 per year per company, so it's very reasonable. And thankfully, we get support from the local enterprise offices through Enterprise Ireland, which is €100,000 for 2020 and branching into 2021 because of the delays with COVID. But to date, Link has received €200,000 in funding over 3 years across 50 companies. That's roughly €1,600 per year per company. So it's a small investment for what you get out of it.
It is by its nature local. How big could your network become? Because, of course, you're not really going to do business, say, with people from Mallow up in Donegal, are you?
You can. Like some of the clusters in Northern Europe would have 1,000 companies in their cluster. So, but obviously because of our size and scale in Ireland, that's not feasible. But
taking most of the sector.
It's huge, yeah. And like the sector we're in is obviously engineering and manufacturing. So we cover from Cork to Limerick. We have an ambition to expand the network and bring in obviously parts of Kerry, the rest of Limerick, parts of Tipperary, and maybe West Cork. And again, if we've learned anything in the last 12 months, where you're based or located, it doesn't really matter anymore, because we've gone online with everything. Yes, once COVID it hopefully passes off in the next 6 or 8 months and we can get out more and we can start to visit people's factories and tour facilities, well then, because that's a big part of the network, is actually people leaving the day job, going to an exhibition, exhibiting together, or going visiting factories that we can learn off each other and learn together. That's a bit of a struggle then for the distance wise. So a company in Donegal is a bit too far away from the activities we'd organise. But there are also a number of engineering clusters in Ireland, in the Midlands and in Northern Ireland that we are tied with, and we link and we network with them as well. So I suppose where it ultimately can go to in time is you have a cluster of clusters in engineering supported by government that come together and share off each other and leverage off each other's capabilities and skill sets, ultimately to get off the island. That's the ultimate aim for all of us, is to grow everything.
I love
that
phrase, because we have to all get off this island. 6 million here, 6 or 8, 10 billion offshore, so I think we know where the market is. Back to my usual cynical self. Those people now, you've already said of those people who wanted something for nothing, but within business, you know, that there are opportunities arise and you're not really going to give them to your competitors. So within a cluster, there must be times when you kind of put, like fellows used to do with their homework back in the day, put your hand around it and keep it all to yourself. And the model must break down or maybe not work as well. Sometimes.
Sometimes, but we don't have a lot of companies that compete directly with each other within our group. There are one or two examples, but we've seen in other sectors where companies who were, you know, really ardent competitors coming together for the greater good because it makes sense for them on particular projects or particular approaches around a product to bring it to market. It makes sense for them to come together. And if we've learned anything in Link or even in our own businesses ourselves respectively, the only way you progress your business these days is to collaborate and to joint venture or to partner and to network. And companies, you know, whilst they might compete with each other, they still have different skills or different strengths within their businesses, even though they might compete. And they learn over time, you know, together we're much stronger. And it, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense in particular when companies are trying to get off the island of Ireland and get business outside of Ireland. And to be going over there, it's tough going and competing with each other when they should be working together.
On the same team. You know?
Yeah.
And there are examples as well on the website. I should say it's a link is spelled L-I-N-C.
Yeah.
That one of the examples that you talk about is the tenders, when people are tendering. It obviously is frequently anybody who tenders, you know, you have to cover off where you're not very strong. But of course, if you bring in partners, you can be literally strong across the entire tender.
You can. And also what it has allowed, we've had two sets of tenders that the companies have come together on. And both were great examples. Unfortunately, they weren't successful in winning them, but we will, you know, it takes, when you're starting off, it takes 5 to 10 tenders before you get your way and really have a good one that wins, unless you're very lucky and you get the first one. But what it has allowed is the group of companies have come together on a collaborative tendering project. Individually on their own, right, they would have never have gone for that opportunity. But together, they were able to put together the skill sets of each company to have a stronger offering. And one company did the bid, but everyone else fed into it. And thankfully, through Link and through the funding support we have, we were able to bring in somebody to support him on that tendering process, a professional in pulling tenders together. Because, you know, depending on where companies are on their journey, because that's all they are. They're only starting a journey, they're on a journey, or they're well established on their journey. Some companies may be getting involved in public procurement tendering process or for multinationals, and it may be their first time. There's an awful lot to catch up on and learn that first time. But if you have a company that's partnered with you in the network who's done it before, it makes the job a lot easier. And it just in like the way supply chains are going, when procurement and multinationals are going, they don't want thousands of suppliers in their supply chain. They want narrower supply chains, more stable, more streamlined. They want them at a set standard with quality and, you know, all the various gambits. And through Link, we can provide that, you know, and we always say, it's not for the customer to pull us together. It's for us to pull ourselves together so that we can go and talk to the customer with that strong offering.
When it comes to tendering, and you just before we started chatting, you told me you've started listening to the podcast, for which I thank you. There is a young lad, he's only 25, called Charlie Gleason on one of the podcasts. I don't know whether you've heard that one yet. No. He has a company called Zip Mobility. He has little e-scooters. He came up with what I still think is one of the cleverest ideas on tendering. He's just straight out of college and he went off and he got all of the A students, because what do? They work out the system. And he has applied their brains to tenders right around the UK for his scooters. It's well worth listening to and well worth trying to copy. So anybody who gets a good superior mark in a college exam has obviously worked it all out.
Absolutely.
That's a little tip for you
good.
There.
Thank you.
Tell me, Link itself, you are going to try to grow. So are you actively looking for people to give you a shout?
Yes, we are. So at the moment, our membership represents 19 towns and villages across the region. And we want to expand that. But we want to expand it in a way that the ethos and the momentum we've developed as a group and that cohesion, that we hold that we keep the value in the network. So it's not a case that we want to go from 50 to 100 next week. But certainly any engineering manufacturing companies that are in our region, we'd love to talk to them and get them involved and help us to grow the network. And any new company or new member that comes in is going to bring a new skill set, hopefully, and they're going to bring their own bit of value into our network that we can learn from them and they can learn from us. And ultimately, it takes time, you know. So this year is a big year for us in trying to secure some additional funding for the group, because we have a manager in Theresa Mulville, which is hugely important to coordinate the group, do our activities for us. Because in the earlier days, we tried to do it ourselves as business managers. And as you get busy in business, you lose sight of the activity for the group.
I was actually going to ask you that question. You've only 500 people plus to mind in your own chateau. But you also, as I say, if you want something done, you give it to somebody who's busy. Can you really try to do both, to be chair of Link and...
The input for me as chairperson of Link is not a lot. It's very small, actually. You know, it's a couple of hours a week. But for me, it's hugely important because I suppose that we have a great team in EPS in our business, and there's great managers and great employees, and they don't need me to do their work for them. They're quite capable, and some of them are obviously much, much better at doing certain tasks than I ever will be. But Link for me is, and for EPS, hugely important because we're a large employer in the regions where we're based. It's important for us to have good economic development within the region. It's extremely difficult at the moment for all of our members, including EPS, to fill roles, you know, and it's very challenging to fill roles at the moment. Yeah.
So tell me more.
A lot of the companies like Takumi, one of our members, has just announced 60 new jobs in a three-year expansion. Precision engineering.
Okay.
Precision engineering.
I could spend an hour with you talking, of course, about the whole apprenticeship system, which we don't really do in this country properly doing.
Well, that's going to change, because part of our networking, we link in with the regional fora on skills, so Southwest and Midwest. We also link in with the ETBs and the colleges and the universities, and we've great dialogue with them. Obviously, the Minister Harris at the moment he's just concluding a review nationally, actually, now, for a new apprenticeship program and strategy. And that's going to change the whole, I suppose, the dynamic of what traditionally people thought were apprenticeships.
My frustration with that, though, is that we've been talking about this for a long time.
We have.
Jeez, man, would you just get it done? We need these people. There are fantastic jobs, fantastic careers. They'll be making precision things forever.
Yeah, well, all of our members have apprenticeships and have apprentices, and they have a tradition of that, particularly in the as people would typify as the heavy engineering or automation or CNC tool making, etc. But the new strategy, from the input we've had into it and from what we've seen, it's due to be launched, is going to be very different, I think, to what traditionally, you know, if someone talks about apprenticeships in the past, it's a four-year apprenticeship, it's a metal fabricator, a fitter or an electrician, that's what everyone thinks, or it's in the food sector. Whereas the blend of opportunities now coming through the ETBs and through SkillsNet, etc., will be very different, and people will have a lot more options and flexibility around what type of apprenticeships they will do in all types of disciplines across business needs.
I will look forward to seeing when that apprenticeship announcement is made. Before we let you go, we always ask this question now. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would Patrick Buckley hire in a heartbeat?
Who would I hire in a heartbeat? I think, and it's apt to this week actually, I would hire Julie Cinnamon in a heartbeat.
So would I actually. Imagine. She's
about to be replaced. So
give us your reasons.
A number of them really, but I think we have a long association with Enterprise Ireland and EPS, and I'm here today to talk for Link. But Julie would be a huge addition if we could afford her and bring her into Link on behalf of our 50 companies. She's extensive experience on supporting businesses and developing strategy for export and internationalization, and you know all of the good stuff that Enterprise Ireland do. But I found her to be excellent in that role over my years involved with Enterprise Ireland. And I particularly remember it was actually the week that her predecessor was retiring, and there was a function arranged last minute here in Dublin at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And Julie had made a commitment to come to EPS some weeks earlier to visit us and meet with us to look at our business. And she still came. She landed at 8:30 in the morning, so she must have left Dublin at 5 or 5:30. And left us at 11 or half 11 to head back to Dublin for that function. So that was a commitment. She could easily have rang us a day or two before and said, I'll come again some other day, but she didn't. She did it. And my experience and exposure to her as the leader of Enterprise Ireland over the subsequent years was that commitment was there 100%. You know, so
I have
that's
only heard
her
great things about her, and I have met with her, and she also has done fantastic work in trying to drag women into business. And
absolutely,
that's something we are hugely keen on ourselves. That's a great choice, probably the best choice so far. So that is Patrick Buck, the Managing Director of EPS Group and Chair of Link LINC. And if anybody wants to join your group or find out more, first of all,
on our website, and the
website is
www.linkengineeringnetwork.ie.
Very good.
And we're actually rebranding at the moment, again through support from the Leos. So that'll be up and running in the next couple of weeks. And we just get in contact with Teresa Mulville, our coordinator, and Teresa brings any new member company through an induction, and then they get introduced to the group.
Must be the best bargain. 350 quid if you use it and use it properly.
It's great value for what you get. It's great value for what you get. And it's, you know, in any journey, we're only 7 years in. We have a good bit to go yet to, you know, we've seen what really can happen for a region with strong clusters supported by government, proper linkages with, you know, the various agencies. They can be really powerful, you know, and for me, clusters, irrespective of whether it is in engineering or doesn't matter what sector, you know, and there's a lot of talk of foreign direct investment, but this is the next foreign direct investment initiative for Ireland, in my view, is to invest in clusters for all sectors across the whole country.
Really, really interesting, Patrick. And you have now joined Team GBS, That Great Business Show. And we will do our best for you and we will be pushing and dragging people your way. And thank you again so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That
Great Business Show. I had never heard of the term B Corp. That is the letter B and Corp for corporation until this week, when I was told it was B Corp month. B Corp companies are part of a global movement of people using business as a force for good, it seems. And though there are only 3,500 B Corps worldwide, it is a growing movement. And we have some of our own B Corps here in Ireland. We have Urban Volt, Cully and Sully, Moyee Coffee, and Vagabond Tours, and French company Danone that has two major plants here, one in Cork and one in Wexford. Believers in B Corp are on a mission to try to make us all converts to the cause, and that's why they asked to come on to That Great Business Show. Claire McAvilly is Corporate Affairs Director at Danone in Ireland and is a passionate believer in B Corps, and she's signing up to Team GBS today as she joins me in our Dublin South FM podcast studio. Hiya, Claire.
Hi there.
You're not serious. It's not B Corp month, really, is it?
Timing is perfect. It is B Corp month.
Who makes this stuff up?
I'd like to think somebody who's very clever and is thinking about businesses that are doing more than making a profit. So it comes, originates from the US. So it's a US-based non-for-profit. And they really acknowledge that businesses, so many businesses now at the moment are in the sustainability space. They're in the trying to look after their staff, their local community. They're doing CSR. But really what B Corp is it's an accreditation. It's like fair trade.
Well, what does B Corp stand for, do you know?
So the B is, this, the Corp is corporation, B is the letter B. That's what they have come up with.
I wonder where people come up with these things. But anyway, I'm none the wiser now, but you are a true believer.
Well, Danone is our business worldwide, and we have the intention that all of our businesses and our factories will be B Corp accredited by 2025. And what that means is you're essentially being audited by this organisation. So everything from what bleach you use in the bathroom right through to your HR policies. For our business, in our dairy business in Dublin, that was 236 questions. So seriously intense, and it should be. It's not something that you get easily. And for us, it probably took about a year for us to get it.
That's a big commitment, and presumably it costs money as well.
So there is, once you are successful, there is an accreditation fee, and that's based on the turnover of your business. But for us in Danone, we're really seeing, particularly in younger consumers, the real focus around transparency within asking businesses, okay, so what are you doing beyond just making profit? Beyond just making money. And I suppose, but one of the most important things, and which is challenging, I'm not going to lie, is that you are encouraged to change your articles of association to say that you're not just about making profit. So it's a legal change.
Does that actually make a difference?
In the eyes of B Corp, it does, absolutely.
In your eyes?
I think it's a real commitment, because it's not just about the lovely, nice CSR things that you do, or the how you've changed your packaging to be more recyclable, but it's you're fundamentally changing the way you run your business.
So talk me through what Danone did, because we can obviously talk about others as well, but you obviously know the ins and outs of what Danone has done to get this accreditation.
Yeah, so there was a lot of the things I think companies are already doing. So things like, you know, HR policies, parental leave policies, a lot of things that you're probably doing already. But for us, there was a real commitment to look at things like volunteering, for example, and kind of formalising that and giving staff 2 days to volunteer.
A year, is it?
2 days a year, yeah.
And that is part of their employment contract, or they're an option for them?
That's an option, an agreement by the business to give them the 2 days. It's a big focus around the environment and how you're all the whole way through your supply chain, how you're impacting on the environment. So for us, the focus was very much around making our packaging recyclable. Also something that does take a long time too. And then very much kind of looking at the impact, let's say, of our building and what could we do in that space. So we worked with our fellow B Corp, Urban Volt, to look at our lighting. So a myriad of things.
There are 3,500 B Corps only worldwide. Now, in Ireland alone, there are 250,000 SMEs. A little bit of catching up to do.
And 100,000 companies who have applied and haven't. And so 100,000 companies have gone online, signed up to the B Corp impact assessment, and only 3,500 have gotten it.
Wow.
So it's not easy. It's not easy. And it shouldn't be easy. If it was easy, we'd all have it.
But if everybody believes that they're doing good and being nice to the environment and to their staff, does that not qualify, no?
Well, I think it's about getting some, taking a step back and getting somebody else to see, are you truly being good?
And what are the things, do you know, on what people miss out on, or, you know, what's the big ones that they're clearly not doing properly that they always get pulled up on?
Yeah, so the golden child in the B Corp world is Patagonia, who did amazing things like built their head office facing the sun in a certain direction, like fab things, you know, blow your mind. Not as achievable in our little office in Dean's Grange, I'm not going to lie.
Irish did that in Newgrange 5,000 years ago.
Little did we know we could have got B Corp points. So where do most companies do very well on the community side, because the companies that are going for the accreditation are already engaged in the CSR space. And on the people side, the environment is definitely the one that we all need to work harder on. And then for Danone, we did well on the governance, because we have very kind of clear governance from a multinational point of view.
And there are business benefits.
So I suppose, as you say, it's early days in Ireland, but definitely the movement is getting great traction in the UK and certainly within the food and beverage space. So Waitrose, for example, are very supportive of B Corp and the B Corp brands, and they would have a B Corp hub on their website where the B Corp brands are showcased and promoted. And they've told us that the brands that sit in the B Corp hub are growing 31% faster than their equivalents.
It's not bad, is it?
So there you go. And pretty much growing with the age bracket of the 24 to 35 year olds.
And did you tell me that they've been given their own space and their own highlighting and?
Yeah.
So eventually there will come a tipping point where it's the non-B Corp companies will be out the back or hidden away somewhere.
And that's the dream, you know, and it's great to be first by the pool on these things. But, you know, really that's what we would hope, that it would become as common as fair trade and as understood as fair trade. But for, I think the important thing is, for my sense now, kind of looking back on the accreditation process, is so many companies are doing a lot of this already. This is just about being audited.
And you are a very large corporation and you have the resources to put against this or put into this. Could Mrs. Murphy's corner store or Mr. Murphy's cafe apply for the same?
Yeah, I mean, we know that there are smaller Irish SMEs who are already on the journey coming behind us. We know you mentioned a couple already in terms of Irish smaller companies, some who might be part of kind of a bigger mothership. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about what your business is doing in the particular market. It's not really what's happening at the global level.
And accreditation comes from a for-profit company, isn't it? I mean, this is a business that somebody's going around with the little sticker saying B Corp, yeah. But you're paying them to do this.
If you're successful, if you achieve
it at the
end.
How much is it expensive, or do you know how much it costs?
It's a percentage of your turnover, so it very much depends.
They must love Danone, because Danone is a very big turnover.
Well, they don't do badly out of us. I'm not going to lie. But I think, you know, that there's very much the intention that this is the way things are going and consumers will demand this level of transparency. I think especially post-COVID, like, what is the role of business in society and how can we contribute? And there's been a lot of chat, obviously, about the whole kind of Build Back Better. But it's definitely something, you know, the role for businesses in terms of what they can, how they can support.
And it is, as I say, an organisation that runs this. I think it's an American organisation,
that's
correct?
Right.
Yeah. Does it make an impact anywhere else in the world?
So it started in the US, and obviously that's where the majority of the accredited companies are. So it's really only starting to get going. They had an amazing conference in Amsterdam just before the lockdown. And usually when you go to these things, you are like, you know, big Danone, but it was so nice to be there with other smaller companies, like Jamie Oliver's company has just been accredited, The Body Shop, The Guardian newspaper. So you might even go for it yourself here. You know, there could be an opportunity. So, but it was really like a group of like-minded people, and it didn't matter if you came from a global multinational. You're all there with the same intention.
And you are encouraging other Irish companies to do so. That's why you're here. You want them to get involved.
Yeah, we are. We are encouraging, but we're also offering our support, because you're dead right. We are very fortunate. We had our Paris pals giving us a hand to get us over the line. So, you know, we'd be delighted. And we already are mentoring Irish companies who are coming along behind us. So very happy to support where we can.
And what does that mean to a company that wants to do it? Is that a vast commitment of time?
So I think there is a sense of, you go through your first look at the questions and that you have to decide.
I have to say, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, you change your mind like the thousands did already. But you have to look at what you're going to improve and what's realistic for your business and where you can really achieve a change. But it's kind of a constant thing. That's kind of really what takes the time.
Now, nobody comes around to do anything in person anymore. But back in the day, did people come knocking on your door, looking down your, I don't know, your IT systems or?
Yeah, there is a site tour that's part of the accreditation process. I mean, obviously, last year it was all done virtually, but hopefully when we're back up and running.
And you get it, but that's not the end, because they come back again.
You can lose it. So it is about, you're accredited every 3 years. So for our Danone dairy business, we accredited in 2019, so we'll be going again next year. So we're in the year prior to accreditation, so you have to really start to think about, okay, what are we going to do this time? How are we going to up our score, chase those Patagonia fellas, and see, you know, what we can do differently?
I can't let you go without two questions. One is, which you're not even prepared for, but it was just happened that I read this morning, you're doing something really innovative in Ireland on the dairy side, on the baby milk
side.
On the
infant formula, yes. Yeah. Good timing. The planets aligned. Yeah, so very exciting. A new innovation coming out of Wexford. So we have launched our pre-measured infant formula Aptimal tabs.
And come here to me. Now, listen, I have reared three babies who are now fully grown up, productive members of society. I was able to measure out the formula myself with a little scoopy scoop. How innovative is it to have a little tab?
Well, so many other companies have come up with innovative formats of their products. And I don't know, do you remember being out and about where you had to bring the powder in a little container and then you had to shake it in, you know, when you were on the road or whatever. Yeah. So it is all about convenience, and that's really what parents are looking for.
And it's being made in Ireland.
That's right. It's been made in Wexford. So
super.
With some Japanese technology. So delighted to be rolling that out. And we've launched in the UK first. That's our pilot market. Obviously, it's our biggest market. And then we look to roll out here.
But it's also going to go worldwide from Wexford, which
is the plan.
Because you are huge in China.
Well, we're huge and we export to 41 countries out of Wexford. So we are a major player.
How many people employed in Wexford specifically?
354.
And then in Cork?
200 odd.
So you've got 600 odd people.
And then about another 120 here in Dublin.
That's fantastic.
So we are a very proud French company, but very much an Irish operation.
Good. Now, hire in a heartbeat. You have been warned.
And I got greedy and wondered, could I come with two?
And I said yes.
Great. So my first is the amazing Alan Alda, actor.
Yeah.
In MASH.
From MASH. I loved him in that.
Yeah. So Alan was involved in a program called Scientific American Frontiers for many years. And he realized that the skills of acting would be very beneficial for scientists. So he set up the Alan Alda Center for Science Communications. And I think now Luke O'Neill, he is the media darling, you know, that really there's an opportunity for scientists, particularly scientists who work.
Do you think will Luke get an Oscar for his performance?
God, I hope so. I'd hope to be there for it. But it's certainly for, you know, for us in the food sector, in pharma, in tech, you know, the role of the scientist telling a story about your brand. It's, you know, it's a real opportunity. And Alan recognised that.
And I have heard about him doing that before as well. It's a huge business for him.
Massive. And I was really fortunate to meet him in person. Meet your heroes. You know, it's always a little dodgy. Which way is it going to go? So I was involved in a science communication SciComm conference for a couple of years. And he came over to speak and was just a legend.
A very charming man, I believe. Now, you have a second one.
My second, and sorry to be greedy, but I couldn't come away without mentioning Chuck Feeney.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate in previous roles to work for an Atlantic Philanthropies funded charity. So obviously made his millions in the duty free shopping
his billions,
and gave it all away.
Every last cent.
And so also another hero that I was fortunate to meet in the office on Bagot Street. And he walked in with a shopping bag and a problem with his Swatch watch. And that was him. You know, it was all about the role of business and philanthropy. He was like the grandpa way before Bill and Melinda Gates.
And so, a man who has done absolute huge things for this country. And I know there are books about him and all, but I think in years to come, you know, his star will rise even further and we'll remember him as being a massively positive influence in this country.
As somebody said, I think it was Forbes, who said he did more for Ireland than St. Patrick. So another inspirational person.
And hang on a second, those snakes.
Those snakes.
Claire McAvilly, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. She is Corporate Affairs Director at Danone in Ireland, and she is now also a Team GBS member.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. This could be your ad on That Great Business Show.
And That Great Business Show is only possible thanks to the support of That Great Shaving Oil Company, De Facto. Made in Mayo, it is the world's best shaving oil. For men and women, it's the best anyone can get. DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
We may finally be facing down the pandemic, but post-COVID, some things will never be the same. For example, we know about the massive shift to online shopping. So if you had a job in physical retail, well, it's possibly time to start thinking about a new career. So how about a career where it's estimated that there will be almost 150,000 vacancies in Ireland alone in the foreseeable future? That's the IT sector. And whoa, before you say you couldn't or wouldn't be able to learn IT skills, wait until you learn about the Dublin Coding School, because they are looking to train people exactly like you. And they can train you very rapidly. Luke Tracy is General Manager at the Dublin Coding School, and he joins me now on That Great Business Show. 150,000 vacancies next year, or damn near that.
Yeah, and that's the prediction by Skills Ireland, actually. So it's not our number, it's coming from their research. We can get into that maybe about why we're launching the Dublin Coding School, and you've certainly hit the nail on the head that that's one of the reasons. But before I do, I'd like to thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome.
I reached out actually myself via LinkedIn, and you were kind enough to give us the chance, and we're
proves
delighted
that it works. Contact us, producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com, or via LinkedIn, or via any which way you want. Do talk to us, because we love your stories, just like this one.
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone is listening and wants to get the word out, come on, I would advise. They're very friendly and they got back straight away. But you mentioned the skills gap there. So, the Dublin Coding School, we're launching it this month, and we're launching courses in IT. I'll maybe get to some of those, what they are later. We're not a complete startup, by the way. We have a track record. We have three other schools across Europe where we have 5,000 graduates, and we've been placing them in companies. So we have a
Where are those other schools?
They're in Vilnius, Kaunas, and also Riga at the moment in Europe. So we have a model that we use where it's a bit more than a coding school. We also have a career center and an aftercare program, and we're bringing that here. So that's really what we're up to.
And what you are looking for, you're looking for one, adults,
yep,
two, people who may have had one, two or three careers. And my introduction, I actually waved that big red flag to people saying, I know nothing about IT, but you can actually change all of that.
That's right. Yes. So it is aimed at adults who might be looking to change their careers. Maybe you've had one or two jobs already. And, you know, you can see which way the wind is blowing. You're realizing that, you know, the way the world of work has been digitized and jobs have become more technical. Or even during COVID, I know it's a time where a lot of people need to reset. You might have had a job and maybe it's in hospitality, maybe it was in sales. And you're saying, well, look, I can see there's a lot of inward investment here from American tech companies. There's a lot of ads for data analysts, for web developers. Maybe that's the direction I should go. So it's aimed at adults who want to change their careers. Now, look, anyone can come along. So if you're an 18, 19-year-old and you want to come and do our courses, that's absolutely fine. But they're actually, we're targeting adults who want to change their career, but also the courses are designed for them. So we've done some research into how adults learn. Our lecturers go at that pace. They're, you know, they're ready for people who are experienced in life, but maybe not in, in technical areas. So that, that's really who the school's for. Now,
we're not talking about a 3 or 4 year kind of university course either, which is music to my ears.
Yes, well, that's actually well spotted. So the courses are 2.5 months.
You honestly teach in 2.5 months? Honestly?
You can, you see, and we have done it. And, well, because, look, the people coming here, it's not a sort of a nice to have, you know, you're going to learn crochet or some sort of hobby. This is a must have. You're trying to change your job because you've hit a wall or something like that. So you mightn't have time to do a 3-year degree at university. You mightn't even have time to do a 9-month diploma because you need to get your CV out there now to get a job. So they're designed in 2.5 months. They're led by, and this is very important, industry professionals. So people working in the field right now, not academics. And they're teaching you how to do the job from their point of view. So for instance, our data analytics course, which is the first one we're launching next month, we have 3 lecturers on that, one of them at Bank of Ireland, one of them at TikTok, ex-Facebook, and the other one at Wayfair, very large retailers. So these are really solid pros who are going to teach you. And also, when you register for the course, you get 2 goes at it. You can sit the course for 2.5 months. And if you say, look, something hasn't sunk in, I can get my CV out there now, I can sort of start applying, but I think it hasn't sunk in. So we actually give you a second chance. So you can re-register for the course, sit it again within a 12-month calendar year period to sort of re-sit it with another lecturer just to get the information in. So we offer the courses quickly with an industry professional and you get a second chance.
I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who have done 2, 3, 4, 5 years of data analytics and they're listening to you who is going to do the same in 2.5 months and they're saying, get off.
Well, that's, and their opinion is valid. But also remember here, Conal, we're training people to entry level. We're not saying you're going to be advanced. So we're helping you change your career and get in at the bottom. So we're looking at getting you in as an intern to then being hired or getting you in at a junior data analyst, junior web developer, junior software tester. So that's really the level we're training you up to.
And if you're a 40 or a 50-year-old, would that apply as well?
Yes, because these are, we're taking a leaf out of maybe B2B training. So, you know, you're not getting a degree here, but what you are getting is a certificate and a portfolio. If you look at the way artists try to get into art college, they take smaller courses, they build up a portfolio of work and they demonstrate, this is what I can actually do. It's not about the piece of paper, it's what I can do. So on our courses, you will be building a portfolio of work. The web development course, you're building websites. We actually have a nice project where you're using AI technology to embed into those websites. And then that becomes your portfolio to demonstrate your work after you've left. I should probably mention, we're more than just a school with courses. I should probably mention at this point, the Career Center, where, you know, if you register for one of our courses, we have a consultation with you before you confirm it to say, you know, who are you? What's your background? What are you looking to do? You know, because sometimes changing your career is about the story you tell as well. So then you say, okay, you're now registering, you're doing our data analytics course or web development. Once you've finished, you go back to the Career Center. We then consult with you again. We help you write your CV to make sure you've got those keywords in there. It's presented right for a technical role. We also get your online presence correct on LinkedIn, GitHub, maybe if you're the developers. That's one of the websites they use. I'm learning all these words myself, Conal. And also we do mock technical interviews with you to make sure you're okay and prepared and confident to go if you do get an interview. And then there's a second part to it. We then look at brands who hire in the areas of our courses and we partner with them. And then by partnering with them, I mean, they agree to let us know when they have roles. And then we let them know when we've got good graduates and we send over the CVs. We can't guarantee they'll call you for your interview, but we can guarantee you will get your CV over. Then it's up to them. But what we do there is we bypass these algorithms, which are blocking CVs online. I'm sure your listeners, some of them will know it's going to be frustrating sending your CV around and not getting an answer. We get it in that back door. So hopefully you can walk in the front door. So that's the Career Center and how it works.
All of this is online at the moment?
Yes, we have, it's dublincoding.ie is the website. But also if you're looking on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, even Instagram at the moment, but that's probably more some fun pictures we're putting up. But if you put Dublin Coding School, you'll be able to find us. And if you want to get in touch, you can also, you know, my email is luke@dublincoding.ie, or there's the info one. Get in touch with the team.
I never believe those info ones. Just go, Luke.
I know.
And this will cost money.
Yes, yes.
CAVE-aid, how much?
Depending on which course you're doing, but they start around the 1,500 euro mark. So you would be doing web development for data analytics, which is the first one we're launching here. It's 1,890, but...
If I did that course, and I have a big interest in the whole area of data analytics, because it is, without question, the future, everything. This podcast is so digitally analyzed, it's not funny. Everything, almost decisions we make about guests are based on digital analysis. The future will be data analytics, but the course will prepare me for, you said entry level. Are there jobs in, take a name, Facebook, in Google, at entry level?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. So we actually design all of our courses based around analysis of the jobs market. So if we see a job being advertised enough, it triggers us, this is in a technical space.
Ah, your algorithm.
To put that job on. So if you take something like the banking sector, you know, you used to deal with them over the counter, with paper money, and the bank would have to hire the tellers to be there. You probably noticed they're not there anymore. And now it's all apps, it's digital, it's, you know, you're doing transactions online. And if you look at all of the banks now, they're all hiring data analysts. And that's a job that they're there. So even in retail, they're hiring data analysts from managing the stores. You know, there's sensors underneath all of the shelves you're going around in Tesco, which is just below the studio here, telling them when to restock the shelves, what products are selling more. And they're hiring staff to manage all of these systems. So the world of work has changed. And yes, there certainly are jobs in the areas we're putting forward, which were initially data analytics, web development.
At the entry level. That's my question, really.
Yes, at the entry level.
So if I do your course and I get your piece of paper, which is not accredited by any university or anything, is it? Does it have, you know, those levels? Is it a level 5, 6, 7, 8?
No, we do in other countries, but here, no, because this is about practical learning. So we're building your portfolio, your technical portfolio, and then your skills to be a practitioner. So it's not so much about getting, as I said, a university accredited qualification. It's really about learning the skills and then having a body of work that you can demonstrate you can do it to get hired on these teams. And you'd be surprised the types of companies hiring technical people now. You know, we always say, oh, Google, Facebook is the example. But then there's so many other companies that are, I mean, one, a partner that we're getting on board now is a supply chain company, and they analyze the data within a supply chain, and they need data analysts to do that. They also need software testers to make sure their software is running okay.
Actually, you on the phone to me got very excited about software testing. You told me it's kind of the orphan child of this area.
I did. It's the real unsung hero of the technical jobs world. And
what do they do?
They now, because you get the web developers and designers who are probably the rock stars here. So they're developing your website, the front end, the back end, and they build the shiny new toy. Then they need to pass that on to the tester, who will basically find the bugs, find the mistakes, find the things that aren't working. And they test it for all manner of things. And then they send it back saying, maybe these things need to be changed. So they're called QA testers, so quality assurance testers, software. Very big in the computer gaming industry. And in fact, we're bringing on a computer games company as a partner who are having, I can't name their name now, who have an internship program going on in 3 months, and they've agreed to consider our graduates as interns for that, one of the major computer games companies. So that's a good one. We're going to have an event about that, actually, once they come on board, about what it's like to work in the computer gaming industry. We're actually having an event this month, on the 30th.
This is March.
Yes, this month, on the 30th, of what it's like to work in data analytics. And three of our lecturers are panelists on that. That's all confirmed. So you can check out that event. But going back to
They'll be really interested in this. Where will they find that? And can they register? Is it free?
They can register. We'll be putting up the registrations probably by the end of next week. We've just confirmed the speakers and everything. So that'll be on our social media, and it'll be on our own website, dublincoding.ie, and it'll be on our Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. But just to finish before my train of thought on the QA testers, and even I didn't realize before, there's a real career there. There's entry level, so there's junior tester. There's, you know, executive level, and then you have heads of department now, the head of the testing department. So there's a whole career path through in testing. And there's two types. There's manual testing, where you're doing it yourself. Then there's the more advanced automation testing, where you're running these programs. And so that's a course we offer. And I think people looking at the technical world don't always realize the specific job titles and career paths that are there. So that's really what we're trying to demystify and bring to the public.
You're not prepped for this question. Look deep into my eyes.
Yes.
Have you done any of these courses yourself?
Me? not these particular courses. I haven't done myself, but I have a background in being a glutton for punishment for education. So I did my initial degree in the arts and ancient history and masters, but and then I did an MBA in Imperial College. But then technical-wise...
For those who don't know Imperial, that's a posh one. That's pretty cool.
It is. I was lucky enough to be there. I went to London for... I'm from Dunleary, but I was in London for 15 years and I thought, I want to get out of here with the experience and the qualifications. So, but then I did two part-time courses. So I did artificial intelligence in MIT, was one of them. So I've done technical courses and seen how they can work. And of course, I haven't sat this course, but I have read over all of the materials and the syllabus and all the rest of it and engaged with the lecturers.
Next difficult question. Why did you call it the Dublin Coding School, not the Ireland Coding School?
Yep, that's another one. I mean, our coding schools throughout Europe are named by the city. Now, in a pre-COVID world, if you take a country like we had one in Lithuania where it was the Vilnius Coding School, their second city, so like Cork, is Kaunas. So it was the Kaunas School and their walk-in facilities. But it's online now, so it's Dublin because that's our brand. We name ourselves by the city and that's how we've done it. Probably a point that came from that is we are looking at having a facility in Dublin where, you know, maybe next year when it's okay, when it's safe. And then as a student, you can still register online or register to be a live student. And we'll always offer the online version as well.
And who is the we behind all of this?
The we, well, there's myself. The founder is actually Julia, who is from Vilnius. She founded it and they've got a big team there. But now I'm here. We've actually registered.
Are you the sole flag bearer in Dublin or in Ireland?
I was the first. We have a team now. So yeah, we've registered as a limited company here. So we're the Dublin Coding School Limited. We're a sister company. And yeah, I'm the general manager and company secretary, but we have a marketing manager here now, Greta, and we've also got now a team of lecturers, you know, to cover all the courses. So we have a team that's just here, but, you know, we do communicate and share tips with the other schools around Europe.
That is pretty good now. Final question is about hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Now, that's a great question. And it's left field. And I have to say, you were kind enough to tip me off yesterday that this might be asked. And I had a good think about it. And, you know, you're going through the world of sports, you're thinking, you know, and it's very hard to leave Paul McGrath out, but I did this time. He's one of my heroes. But, and then you're thinking, will I put in Barack Obama? Will I put in, but actually I settled on William Shakespeare.
Okay.
And the reason.
We had Andrew Lloyd Webber on episode 25, I think.
Yeah.
So Willie Shakespeare, that's kind of bringing us upmarket a bit.
Yeah, and well, there was reasons for it, which maybe a lot of people mightn't know about Shakespeare. So there's been quite a bit of scandal about some of the actors, Mark Rylance being one, saying Shakespeare didn't write these things, and we've looked at the handwriting, and sure, he did write this, but then someone else wrote that. And what it's actually a fundamental misunderstanding of him. He was a very collaborative team player. Shakespeare would write things. He'd get his great friend Burbage, the actor at the time. And actually, they're saying that they were... Burbage got a state funeral, by the way. Shakespeare didn't. He was the star. He was the George Clooney of the era. And they said that he hit it big with Julius Caesar, and that was the big hit. And then Shakespeare said, right, I've got to write parts for him. So he did King Lear. He did Hamlet. He wrote all these parts. And he'd basically try out scenes. The actors could ad-lib it a bit. He'd rewrite them. They'd write them in. And, you know, they kind of collaboratively came up with it, but he was the driving force. So I want him as a team player. Obviously, we want someone in our business as a great copywriter to market. But the third thing, he ran the business of the company himself. And he was a very rich businessman, putting out these plays and getting the income in. And he obviously retired to the countryside. So we'd also have his business now, which is also something maybe people didn't realize about Shakespeare. So I think he'd be perfect.
He sounds very interesting, and I can honestly say I hadn't thought of him before, and you would be amazed what you learn, what we all learn on That Great Business Show, because I've just learned all about Mr. William Shakespeare. Luke, if anybody wants to find you, they will find you at luke@dublincoding.ie.
Yep.
Cool. That's Luke Tracy, General Manager of the Dublin Coding School. Thank you very much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show. The stars on the show was Keith. That's Keith Stars, our exceptional engineer. Peter Rice will add some spit and polish and ads later on. And that's why we're already known as the best-sounding podcast by far. This week's shout-outs are for Arlene Harris for highlighting Dave Kerr. Business editor without equal, Vincent Wall, suggested Patrick Buckley. Luke Tracy came to us through our website. You heard him saying that. Don't forget that you can do the same. And my old radio pal, Shelley Gray, DJ and dietitian with Danone, got me on to Claire McAvilly. Thanks to you all. If you know any other great businesses that deserve to be highlighted on thatgreatbusinessshow.com, go straight to the website and click that Share Your Story button. And by the way, I'm delighted that we have an exceptional Irish business leader, John Teeling. Yes, whiskey, mining, and women's tights, John Teeling. He will be with us for an Easter special in a fortnight's time. But before that, we're back with episode 27 next week. Finally, our thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for just 1 week, and I'll swear you'll never go back to horrid old shaving foam. Buy it online now and tell me what you think. And that's it from me, Conall O'Moran. We'll talk again next week on That Great Business Show. Slán tamall.